paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadness.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 868 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. It's Thursday night as I record this, and I'm just having a beverage. Stacy has gone to hang out with her best friend, and I am here. Kirby is sitting in front of the fire because he just got a haircut, and he's always super cold when it's cut so short, but his hair grows so fast. He's like me. He's just like his dad. Anyway, so where was I going with that? I don't know. I'm sitting down here. I'm going to get the rest of this episode done. Of course, I've got a feature review that I did with our friend Dwayne, and I'm going to tell you what that is right after I tell you that I'm proud to be sponsored by the Patron Dreadites, the supporters at patreon.com/dreadmedia. Help keep this show going in perpetuity. I appreciate them, and you should join them for as little as a dollar a month. You could, check out the wares over there. You get early episodes. So, like, I'm going to finish this tonight, and the Patron Dreadites get Monday's episode on Thursday. And I've got Patreon exclusive podcasts. There's unboxing videos and reaction videos. I'm going to do another reaction video, I think, probably this weekend. Now that I've fixed some shit with my computer, with this computer, I've got two computers now. So yes, they have different tasks. My stupid task involves transferring the file from one computer to the other in order to upload it to Patreon. Because one of my computers is so old that Patreon no longer works in Safari on my computer. Entirely. I just can't post things. I can see it. I can read it. I can't make a post, which is a pain in the ass. I don't know what the problem is. Everything else works with Safari. But anyway, it's fucked up. I don't know. Anyway. Here we are. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Help support the show. Thank you very much. Appreciate everyone who does. What's going on this week? This week, Dwayne and I are taking a look at the, off the top of my head, the 70s film, 72, is that what it is? I can't remember. Dunwich Horror, which came up not so long ago. I interviewed Lynn Lowry, the great Lynn Lowry. Also in Lynn Lowry's filmography is one of a few films she did with a guy who doesn't quite get the credit he deserves, I think. Richard Griffin. He was a guy that was doing it in the aughts as far as, low-budget indie horror. And it was another one of his films, Splatter Disco, that I really loved and talked about it on this show and began my crush on leading lady Sarah Nicklin. A film I've always meant to see, is his film Beyond the Dunwich Horror. and that's from 2008. Now, of course, in these I've had DVDs of this on, it's not even my Amazon wish list. It's eBay because it's so laid out of print. Amazon doesn't even, I guess I could search it for used copies. Never thought about that, I guess. But anyway, eBay, the prices were always huge for this DVD. And I was like, look, okay, I'm not paying $40 for a DVD of this. You know what I mean? So never got around to seeing it. But of course, these days, this modern era, it's available for free on Plex and Tubi. So there you go. We're talking about Beyond the Dunwich Horror. I'll do that solo because I watched it for myself, but also to talk about it this week to combine with Dunwich Horror. There you go. You get the idea.
Sometimes you just lose your train of thought.
And before we jump into things, I just want to throw a shout out to longtime homeboy David Agronoff, who just celebrated the release of his most recent novel, People's Park. Listen, I read this early last year, or maybe it was longer ago than that. I can't quite remember. David would be able to tell me, or I could look back in my email because I've still got it. But, this book blew me away. I sat quietly on it and now it's out. It's available at all the places. It's called People's Park by David Agronoff. A really awesome sort of coming of age psychedelic sci-fi novel set in Bloomington, Indiana, at a park where all the weirdos and punks gather. You know, it's fucking awesome. It's fucking awesome. It's going to be like one of the books of the year. So get it. You know, Amazon, all the places, Barnes and Noble, all the places. People's Park by David Agronoff. All right. Let's get to the reviews. First off, we're going to kick into the review of the film Dunwich Horror with Dwayne. And before we do that, we're going to listen to the Lovecraft-themed, I sort of consider them hard rock, but they could also be considered like power pop or punk. I'm not sure what it is, but they're H.P. Lovecraft-themed. Lead singer, conceptual madman, Torrin Atkinson, has been on this podcast, I don't know what, 1, 2, 3 times? At least 2 times. Perhaps 3 times. Did I get a response from him in episode 666? I don't know if I did. But, anyway. The Darkest of the Hillside Thickets from Chilliwack, British Columbia. Here is this kick-ass song, Going Down to Dunwich. Let's do it.
No, I have to go back to Dunwich tonight. As a matter of fact, I should get moving or I'll miss my bus. We'll be right back.
I'm back once again with Dwayne, again, talking about a movie that has been on, well, maybe we haven't talked about this one, but this one has been on my list to watch for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Its availability on Shudder made it even more so something that we had to get around to talking about. It is another entry in the 1970s occult genre. This is Daniel Haller's The Dunwich Horror from 1970, loosely based on H.P. Lovecraft's story of the same title. Did you want to synopsize this one, Dwayne, or should I?
I could do that, actually.
Okay.
So basically, we are at Miskatonic U.
Yep.
University, supposedly in Arkham, I guess. We're basically, there's students are kind of following their professor out of class and raving about how interesting occult sciences are. and basically one of the students, played by Sandra Dee, is told to kind of bring the Necronomicon back to the library.
Right.
And I'm just laughing about it because, it's a fabled grimoire and all that, accursed tome and all that.
He is kind of dreamy,
Yeah. Then basically when she goes to the library, she meets the, really creepy, maybe charming, depends on what you like, the guy, I suppose, Dean Stockwell, who really, really wants to see the fabled, Necronomicon, a famous black magic book. Mm-hmm. And basically she actually lets him start to read it, before the professor promptly stops him and kicks him out. And, basically we learn that he is, Wilbur Whateley, who is the grandson of a great grandson, maybe of a warlock that was hanged, many, many years ago.
Great grandson, because Sam Jaffe plays his grandfather, right?
Yes, exactly. Right. Okay. And then, but Wilbur still wants to read that Necronomicon. So he basically, convinces Sandra Dee to come back to his, ancestral home in Dunwich. And, basically she doesn't really end up leaving the home as she kind of gets embroiled in this whole, plot to summon old ones back to Earth.
Right.
So it's kind of, I guess if I had to sum it up in like three words, it would be, Yog-Sothoth's baby.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, how crazy is this cast?
It is. Yeah, it is.
Like, you've already mentioned Sandra Dee, Gidget, right?
Yes.
Like, she's the original Gidget, right?
Yeah.
So cute, sweet Sandra Dee, America's sweetheart. Dean Stockwell plays the male lead, which is not something you get in many movies, period.
No.
And then you've got Ed Begley Sr.
Yes, not Junior.
Not Junior. Ed Begley Sr. Plays he owns a library, right?
I think he's like the head professor or something, right. Isn't he? Yeah, like of occult studies or whatever.
Yeah, and then Talia Shire. This is Talia Shire's second movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's her first movie credited as Talia Shire. Of course, the first movie is a Corman motorcycle film called The Wild Racers, where she is credited as Talia Coppola, another member of the Coppola family who changed the name. She should have gone with Cage, too. Well, actually, she went before Nicholas, but how cool would it be if they were all named Cage? They had, like, a family discussion. Okay, well, you can not be a Coppola, but you have to be a Cage. That'd be cool. Talia Cage.
It is awesome.
It is awesome. Actually, Talia Shire sounds great, too. But yeah, so it was shocking to see her pop up in this movie. This sort of slice of... I don't know. There's a weird tone to this movie.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it just has to do with Sandra Dee.
Right.
It's very weird to see her in this movie, period. In a genre movie, period, frankly. Very, very strange.
where there's like, you know, kind of, I don't know, what this kind of occult, hippie, psychedelic,
right,
cosmic horror kind of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I believe the point is to impregnate her, right?
Or yes.
Something? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because Wilbur Whately discusses his brother, but
right.
His brother is not human. His brother is a cosmic old one or god of some kind.
Yes.
I've mentioned that it's not a great adaptation of the Dunwich Horror. However, I will say it is a very, very good example of Lovecraftian cinema.
Yes.
You know?
I would say so too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, it's got the Necronomicon, it's got the, you know, it's got all the Miskatonic University and Arkham mm-hmm. and all that stuff. It's paying homage to that. It's also got this, ancient, prehistoric, ritual, temple, I guess.
Yeah, or altar.
Right? On an altar, yeah. On altar, a temple with an altar on a hill. Mm-hmm.
Which looks great. Yeah.
Yeah, which looks amazing. In which Sandra D is to be sacrificed. You also like, I don't know, like it's a great example of cosmic horror. Like you see Yog-Sothoth, right? If that's what it is, or if that's Wilbur's brother, which would be, I guess, Yog-Sothoth's son. Hard for me to say.
His name's like Kevin or Daryl or something. I don't know what his name. Anyway, some common name.
AKA but, Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great. And then it is, you know, Sam Jaffe plays Wilbur's grandfather, and he's great as a crazy old man.
And he looks so good, eh? Like, he almost looks like not white. Well, I don't know. He looks like a person from a different era, if that makes any sense.
Oh, for
like
sure.
He actually looks like he's some kind of, like he came through time or something. Like,
well, dude, he was born in 1891.
Okay, well, that explains it.
He died in 1984 at 93 years old.
Oh, man. Maybe he, like, oh, maybe he did make a pact with Cthulhu. but he looks so good. Yeah, like, so, authentically almost, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he, like, this guy played a character named Professor Roscoe Weber on The Love Boat before he passed away.
Oh, I think I've seen him. I mean, I think I kind of remember his face then.
But his first role was in a short film in 1916.
Mm.
So the guy's got damn near a 70-year-old or a 70-year acting career.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Pretty crazy. I mean, I know him from the day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah. I guess he is in that, so.
And I guess he's been in some other stuff that I've seen, but, you know, like the Tarzan TV series from the 60s.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he's maybe in some westerns or something. Or,
you know, I'm not seeing a lot of lot of westerns here.
All right.
He was in an episode of SWAT in 1975. Interesting. Yeah, what a weird career this guy's. Buck Rogers in 1980.
It's one episode
of that. I don't know. Yeah. Interesting acting career there for a guy who's born in 1891 and died in 1984. That's pretty crazy. And, he's great in this movie, just as, you know, the wildly insane old man.
He has like that cool staff he's walking around with.
Yeah. I don't know. This was one of two Lovecraft adaptations that Holler did. The other one is Die, Monster, Die.
Right. I've seen that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with Boris Karloff.
Yeah. It was not as good at this. I mean, I obviously love Boris
Karloff. No, I don't remember that movie being very good at all. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
No, I just remember, like, the female lead wears this, like, extremely tight sweater, and that's probably the best thing I can remember about it, so. No, but this movie, yeah, like even the, so like we didn't really bother mentioning it, but there's an opening sequence that kind of explains like the origins, I guess, of that explains, but kind of hints at the origins of like Wilbur Whately and like, I guess, his brother or something. It has like a woman being going to labor, and then they're like,
right.
And then they actually then use that though to segue into the awesome title sequence, which is like that animated thing. So it basically shows like, and has a, I think it's Les Baxter probably the score, right?
Because he did Long Night. Les Baxter does an incredible jazzy amazing. Score.
I love that song.
This whole album is fantastic. I've seen this movie. I saw this movie years and years ago. Remembered very little about it, but what I do remember about it is the jazzy score that I've listened to several times.
And then, I'm a sucker for those animated credits and stuff, too. Mm-hmm. So used to do a lot, whether it was like Roger Corman or just some other lower budget films of that day. They show a lot of, they do kind of like express a lot of the, I don't know what you want to call them, like cosmic attacks or whatever, like things, when bad things go crazy, you know, like when kind of old ones start coming through the thin walls of reality and stuff, then they use like a lot of the, I don't know if they call them exposure effects, but you know, like when it's kind of like, it goes like all a certain color and stuff.
Right.
Things like that. And then like, just kind of elemental kind of stuff happening, like stuff like almost in, sometimes I think there's even almost like invisible things like with wind and waves and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And they do that paint on the film thing when the sky actually, here's something you actually don't see in a lot of Lovecraftian films. In this one, the sky fucking opens and an old one's head appears, you know? It's like, like, wow, that's holy awesome. Shit. You don't see that very often. You definitely don't see that in 1970 either, you know?
No. That's why I like recommended this one. I wasn't sure if you'd seen it before, but I was like, you gotta see this one, because to me this is probably, you know, maybe except for like Reanimator from Beyond, it's probably like one of my favorite Lovecraft adaptations, and just because it's just entertaining, you know, it's got the right score.
That's a really good way of putting it. It's a really good way, because that was sort of when I was coming back to this, I was like, I don't know, like I remember thinking it was good, but it's been a while. Like I could very well be sitting down here to a movie that absolutely sucks, but it absolutely does not. And I was like, you know what? It's actually pretty damn good too.
It is.
I remember just like the other day sitting there and the movie's over, like credits are rolling. And I was like, I'm actually impressed by like how well it held up, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. It just has a different kind of energy to it that, it just a lot of, even non Lovecraft kind of movies certainly have or don't have, in this, well, I wouldn't say in this era, because I mean, obviously there's like the Corman Poe adaptations and that, but that was a little bit before this. So.
One definitely, it's got like similar vibes to something like the Mephisto Waltz.
Yes, you're right.
To put it into sort of the same catalog as same genre of film, 1970s occult thrillers, right? This one just so happens to be attached to H.P. Lovecraft, whereas Mephisto Waltz is, you know, probably more ringing up the idea of the Church of Satan more than anything else. But,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, similar vibes, creepy, weird stuff, cool imagery, and this fucking killer score. It just really does create a very entertaining film. Like it's just, again, it's something you can't take your eyes off of. And that whole last act of the movie is just phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. It's honestly, like, I've seen so many movies where the last act deals with one of the main characters being dragged to an altar. You know what I mean? And then the other one, you know, well, usually the other one has to save them, but in this case, the other one's trying to kill them. And this one really just knocked it out of the park. It's so good.
Absolutely.
So
good. Oh, man. It's one of those things, just one more thing, because I'm thinking about this the other day, reading like a lot of older comics and stuff too. Not like old, but like kind of whatever, Bronze Age kind of stuff and all that. And just kind of wondering, like, sometimes, you know, you can like read a comic and then you look at like kind of the date around when it came out and you can kind of go, well, because, you know, this is obviously pre-internet and everything. Like, did somebody see a movie and then kind of like went and like was inspired by that? You know what I mean? Like, so this is like one of these movies where I'm wondering, like, you know, obviously Lovecraft came around in like the 30s or maybe in the late 20s.
Yeah.
But then I'm just wondering, like, pop culture wise, like, I mean, you know, I remember as a kid, I'd only heard about him, I think, like, through, like, Metallica or something. So probably, like, in the mid 80s.
Well, and then, at this point, those, what are they? The Del Rey reprints?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
They're out and they have, like, really freaky covers with screaming faces and stuff. So, like, definitely, like, there was definitely some Lovecraft going on in the culture at that time.
Yeah, that's true.
Like those late 60s paperbacks.
Yeah, yeah. So I just, that's one of those things, though, you just wonder, like, about
it's,
you know, people, like, seeing this and then putting something in a comic or whatever.
It's funny you said comic, too, because that's what just got me thinking, because this is also the time when, is it Arkham Press?
Yeah,
Arkham Press, like, got in a deal with Marvel Comics where there were Tales of Suspense.
Yeah,
I think that's the name of the 60s series that they brought back in the 70s, but it was all like, it's a horror anthology book basically. Right. And it's like, you know, like Gene Colan doing, you know, art for, you know, The Dweller on the Doorstep. And, you know, there's like a really amazing adaptation of Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper, as well. And so, yeah, so at that time, that would have been about that couple years after this, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Arkham Press is, you know, licensing out its stories to Marvel comic books. We are getting a real uptick in just occult period. You know, I said like 70s thriller. This is 1970, so this would be like, I would probably even still sort of consider this like a weird swinging 60s kind of film. But it really does sort of bridge that, you know, that step into the 70s occult stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. Great movie, though.
For sure.
Great movie.
For sure. Well, I mean, all goes well, I guess I'll probably already lead into the review with a track from Les Baxter. But why don't we end with one of my favorite tracks from the score for this movie, The Dunwich Horror. This is Les Baxter and Devil's Witchcraft. Did we grade it? I don't think we did.
Well, we didn't, but I'm going to give it a, maybe the stars are right, but, I think I'm going to give it like, 5 Eldritch Signs.
Wow. 5 out of 5. Amazing. Yep. It's funny. You talked me up from my, you know, I do, Letterboxd reviews of everything I see. But you talked me up. So my Letterboxd rating is a 3.5, but I'm going up to a 4 on this one.
Okay, yeah.
But this score is a 5 for sure. This is Devil's Witchcraft by Les Baxter. Thanks, Dwayne. We'll be right back. right. For this review, we're going back to the innocent days of 2008. But actually, my relationship with this filmmaker goes back even farther. The first movie I saw by Richard Griffin was the nasty and sort of rudimentary, but still like really ambitious zombie movie, Feeding the Masses. His first real rave from me came in 2008. Nope. Sorry. 2007. My bad. When I watched his film Splatter Disco, I loved it. This bizarre horror comedy was really fun. And in that movie, I developed a massive crush on the lovely Sarah Nicklin. We would follow Richard Griffin and Sarah Nicklin in 2008 to discuss their film None of That, None, N-U-N, a sort of nunsploitation homage. The original title was None of That, but currently it is known as Sister Wrath on IMDb. That one was fun, but you know, as I mentioned at the top, another movie that they made together in 2008 was Beyond the Dunwich Horror, a movie I've always meant to watch. But again, the DVD was either out of print or just ridiculously highly priced, so I didn't really feel like spending that much money on it. I can't really remember. But now we live in the days of the free streamers. Yay! So it is available for free on both Tubi and Plex for those who, if you want to listen to this short review and come out of it like, hey, I kind of want to see that, then that's where you can find it. So the plot here, I'll just read it off of IMDb. If I'm cheating already. Kenny Crawford arrives in Dunwich after hearing that his brother Andrew has been admitted to a psychiatric ward and is suspected in a string of disappearances in the town. With the help of local reporter Marcia Calloway and the eccentric Upton Armitage, he probes the last few weeks of his brother's life. As they do so, they uncover evidence of a plot in the works revolving around Andrew, his girlfriend Nikki Hartwell, played by Sarah Nicklin, and her twisted friend Otto Bellinger. Yeah, this one, that's sort of a vague kind of premise, isn't it? But yeah, the you know, the cult stuff they're involved in, it happens to be Lovecraftian, and they're looking to bring about the presence of Yog-Sothoth, like the movie Dunwich Horror. It's more of an homage. I wouldn't call it a remake or, you know, even like a maybe it's sort of a reimagining. I mean, the plot is not that similar. There's always someone coming to somewhere looking for someone. So you can't really say, you know, that it's based on the original movie. But in tone, it's appropriately similar. I think, you know, there might not be the greatest acting jobs by the entire cast. But a lot of it really was well acted. I think our lead, though he might not look like your Hollywood leading man, was compelling. And Sarah Nicklin is, of course, great. She's great and lovely. There's some ridiculous songs. There's lots of fun with that questionable acting. There's a ton of gore. You know, some like legitimate sort of like Lovecraftian machinations, that I think a lot of Lovecraft inspired movies sort of don't get right a lot of the time. So I thought they did that really well. And I just, you know, I just sort of call it nostalgia. But yeah, sort of re-immersing into the, low budget horror movies, you know, shot on video stuff, from the 2000s. It felt good. Like, this is the era that I created Dread Media in. It's the era that I got back into horror. And well, while Richard Griffin's films Feeding the Masses was pretty early in that one. But these later ones, the ones I really enjoyed, you know, they came a few years later. I'd already had Dread Media at that point. But it just felt very comfortable watching this one. I'll just say that. Lots of twists and turns. I mean, most of it you see coming, but there is like really great costuming and like the cultists look really cool. Lots of nasty gore, some cool sort of Lovecraftian effects. There's like tentacles flying around, of course, at one point that actually do look incredibly impressive. And probably it has a lot more to do with how little you see them than how well they were done. But really appreciated that. Have to throw out a shout out to former Dread Media guest Lynn Lowry, who has a performance in this one. All in all, I'd say a solid night at the movies if you enjoy your Lovecraft, if you enjoy your low to no budget horror movies, especially those of the 2000s. I would highly recommend Beyond the Dunwich Horror then. I'd even go so far as to say it's a 3.5 out of 5. So, yeah, check it out. If that interests you, check it out. If, you know, Lovecraftian stuff interests you, or if, you know, you also, like me, sort of enjoyed the low budget stuff of the early 2000s and mid 2000s, and this is one that you missed as well along the way, then I highly recommend you check this one out because I was not disappointed. On that note, let's get out of here with the final Dunwich song that I'm going to play this week. So Witchery is, there's several bands called Witchery in the extreme metal world. Of course there are. I'm talking about the blackened thrash band from Sweden, Witchery. And this is from their record In His Infernal Majesty's Service. This is their song, Escape from Dunwich Valley by Witchery. So Escape from Dunwich Valley with me, and we'll come back and say goodbye. And I'm going to play a brand new song for you, too. So stick around. I just hit the microphone. And that is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did putting it together for you. I believe the beginning I said that I was trying to get it finished last night. That was Thursday. It's Friday afternoon now. I got tired. That's my excuse. I'm going to get it done sometime tonight, Friday. My parents are coming up. It's my birthday right now as I'm talking. So my parents are coming up into town, and we're having dinner here. And so I may or may not be able to finish this episode before they get here. So I will finish it after they leave. So Patron Dreadites will have this on Friday. Hello, Patron Dreadites. And hello to Marshall and Fisher, if you two are listening. Friends of my youngest sons who have wished me happy birthday through my son. So thank you to Marshall and Fisher. If you are indeed listening, which reminds me, I have to come up with a plan next time I try and do an erotic horror episode. Let's get the hell out of here with a brand new song from the brand new record by Inter Arma. Now, Inter Arma is one of those bands that I find hard to say what genre they are. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, like extreme metal, but there's not a lot of Inter Arma that actually sounds extreme as much, other than the heaviness of it, you know? But, I went to the great metal-archives.com, which is actually officially titled Encyclopedia Metallum, and typed in Inter Arma, and they give me the genre as sludge, black, death, post-metal. You'll have to decide on your own, which is going to be difficult because they change genres almost every song. I have never been the hugest Inter Arma guy. They just, you know, I don't know, never been able to fully get into them over the past couple records of theirs. I have tried, and I have enjoyed some of their records, but nothing that would put it on like an end of the year list. However, here we have their brand new record. It's not even out yet, I don't think. It's coming out either end of April or early May. This is a pre-download that was sent to me from Relapse Records. One of the last people still sending me stuff. Thank you, guys. But, boy, I've been giving this one a listen. I haven't even listened. I've listened to multiple tracks multiple times. I haven't even sat and listened to the whole record yet. But from what I'm listening to and hearing and enjoying, this might just be their best record yet. It's called, again, if I haven't said it, New Heaven by Inter Arma. And this is their song from that record, Gardens in the Dark. You guys take care of yourselves. Take care of others. Happy birthday to me, and we'll see you next week.